Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Welcome to this hour of science fiction. Later on, we'll hear Gordon Dixon's story, Desert Object, on Exploring Tomorrow. But right now, it's How To on X-1. An April 3rd, 1956 broadcast on NBC with Alan Bunce, Ann Seymour, Joe Bell, Lawson Zerbe, and Santos Ortega.
Countdown for blast off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. Far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, Clifford D. Simak's story of the 21st century, How To.
Build your own three-dimensional color TV set. Complete kit, screwdriver assembly in 3 hours. Nah, I've done that. Well, let's see. A dog is man's best friend. Build your own dog. Complete kit. Spaniel model, only $250. Yeah, hey, that's it. My next project.
Gordon, is that you?
Where are you?
On the terrace. I'm just finishing a landscape.
Oh, hi, yeah. Grace, look, did it come?
Now, don't kiss me. You'll get all full of paint.
I wasn't going to. Where is the package?
Well, they set it against the side of the house. Over there, see?
Oh, it came, huh? I want to look at it.
I would have put it down in the basement, but I couldn't lift it.
Hey, this is pretty heavy for a spaniel. I can't lift this myself.
Well, I'll start dinner as soon as I finish this part of the picture. Want to get the grass while the light's right.
Yes, all right, sir. No hurry. I want to examine the kit anyhow.
Of course, if you didn't waste our money on things like dog kits, maybe we could afford a robot and I wouldn't have to cook.
Yeah, all right.
There. That should be enough for now. The light's beginning to get tricky. Good night. You're not going to open that thing here on the terrace. Now, make a mess.
I just want to see the parts. You know, this thing's too big and heavy to be a dog kit.
Maybe it's a Great Dane.
No, it can't be. Look, here's the shipping tag.
From How To Kits, Inc. to Gordon Knight. One dog kit, spaniel model, $250, paid in full.
The Great Dane cost $350.
Well, all I can say is that must be the world's biggest spaniel.
Hey, you know, that's darn funny.
I told you, I don't want you fooling around with it up here. Now, take it down in
Grace,
the basement.
Grace, this can't be a dog kit. You know what I think? It's a robot.
A robot? But you didn't order a robot. Or did you?
No, certainly not. They made a shipping error. That's about the size of it. Ah, doggone it. I'll have to put this crate back together again and call the express company.
Are you going to return it?
Well, certainly I'm going to return it. You don't think we can keep it, do you?
Well, why not? The tag says paid in full, so they can't say we owe them anything.
But it's a robot. They're expensive.
Well, I don't see how the company will ever know. When inventory time comes around, there'll be short one robot and long one dog.
Hmm. Of course, I've always wanted to put together a real robot. Lord knows when I'd get another chance.
Then it's settled.
No, it is not settled either. I tell you what, I'll put it together just to see what it's like. But I won't activate it, see? I mean, I'll disassemble it right away and ship it back to the company.
Mm-hmm.
Grace, look at it. Isn't that a beauty, though?
You finished?
Well, all but the activating.
Oh.
Grace.
What?
Yeah, I was just thinking, how do I know I've got all the parts adjusted properly?
I haven't the remotest idea.
No, well, you know, I mean, the only sure way would be to test it.
You mean activate?
Well, only for a minute or two, you understand. I mean, just to be sure.
Then what?
Well, then I'll disassemble it, naturally.
Well, all right. As long as you don't take too long.
No. I'll have it in a jiffy. Now, here, look. Oh, see, all I have to do is just put on the activating plate. And turn this lock nut in, like so. Now, wait a minute. Just adjust the automatic current control. Huh? Yeah, there. Now, that should do it. Now, stand back. Now, I'll turn it on.
Well, I hope it works.
Oh, it'll work. I followed the directions to the letter. You ready? Now.
It worked!
Yeah, I'll have to oil that joint. Wait. Grace, it's moving its head.
My name is Albert. I am a robot. What is there to do?
Well. It certainly has a nice voice.
Now, take it easy, Albert. Just sit down and rest, and we'll have a little talk.
There's no need to rest. I was made to work.
Well, as long as it doesn't need to rest, I can think of 100 things for it to do. Now, there's the house and the garden and the lawn.
No, look, Grace,
I wonder if he could learn to cook.
A robot can be taught to do anything a person can do.
Oh.
No, hold on a minute, Albert, please, and listen to me. We can't keep you, you understand? I mean, you were sent here by mistake. But, I mean, as long as you're activated, there wouldn't be any harm in letting you do a few things.
I can do anything.
Good. The whole house needs a thorough cleaning.
Grace.
Then, of course, I'd like some new drapes for the study.
No.
And the kitchen hasn't been painted for 4 years. Then there's that leaky faucet.
Oh, Lord.
Well, what's the matter?
Attachments. There aren't any. Look, he can't do all that stuff without attachments. And they cost almost as much as the robot itself.
Don't worry about attachments. Just tell me what's to be done.
Well, you heard my wife.
Oh, what about your grounds?
Oh, I got 100 beat-up acres that need attention, but of course I realize that that's too much work, huh?
Don't worry about a thing. I can fix it for you. I will make the necessary equipment.
Make your own attachment?
Don't worry about a thing.
Yeah, but how?
Oh, for heaven's sake, stop arguing with him and let him get to work.
I'm not arguing.
Morning, Gordon. Your coffee's ready. How'd you sleep, dear?
Oh, not so good. Kept hearing noises all night.
Oh, that was Albert working in the basement.
Yeah. Albert? Hey, gosh, that's right. I forgot robots don't sleep.
But he was working all night. When I came into the kitchen just now, I found the breakfast all prepared. He can cook. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. What's he doing now?
Oh, I don't know. Making something, I think. Oh, Gordon, he's going to be such a tremendous help to me. I'll be able to spend more time than ever with my painting.
Now, wait a minute. What makes you think we can keep him? I mean, no, Grace. I mean, we could get into trouble.
Well, I don't see how. I'll tell you what. Why don't you walk over and call on Anson Lee? He could advise you.
What does he know about it?
He's a lawyer.
Well, technically, he's a lawyer. I mean, he never seems to work at it anymore.
Well, you have to understand, Anson, that's all.
Look, I understand him all right. He's a reactionary, a throwback to the 20th century. Spends all his time lying in a hammock, drinking and reading Proust.
Well, it's what he enjoys doing.
I'll bet that guy never assembled a kit in his life. Can you imagine that?
Well, we all have our peculiarities. Just the same, he could give you legal advice.
Well, all right. I'll go over after breakfast. If it'll make you feel any happier, pass the cream.
Hard cider. Made it myself.
Thought you didn't go in for home projects, Lee.
Oh, I don't. Making this cider was the first honest work I've done in years.
I don't doubt it.
Every time I get a yen to work, I look across at your place and I decide against it. How many rooms have you added to that house since you got it built?
8.
Good Lord, think of that. 8 rooms.
No, it's not hard once you get the knack. Kind of fun.
You just buy a how-to kit.
Sure, I know. Just follow directions.
That's right.
Anybody can build a robot on a kitchen table. Well, no thanks.
Well, why do you say that?
What?
I mean about building a robot.
Oh, I don't know. I suppose I expect you to start building one any time now. You've done everything else. What's got into people these days, Knight? They just aren't equipped to enjoy their leisure. That is, most of them aren't. Me? I am. I read, and I lie in a hammock, and now and again I even think.
Yeah.
Yes, I guess that makes me an eccentric. Here, have another drink.
Oh, no, thanks. I'll have to get back to my place. Albert!
You call me, sir?
Yes, Albert, listen to me. Albert, I have reached a decision about you.
But I'm not Albert, sir. You would hardly expect Albert to be clipping hedges.
Well, if you're not Albert, who are you?
Abe. Albert is down in the basement.
Well, what are you doing here? Where did you come from?
If you wish to talk to me, you will have to move along the hedge with me.
Oh.
I cannot stop working.
Oh, okay, move along. But where did you come from?
Albert made me.
Albert made you?
And now he's down in the basement working on Alfred.
Alfred? Another robot?
Certainly. That is what Albert is for. He makes robots.
Oh, no. Albert!
Oh, there you are.
Albert, what's going on here?
I'm reproducing.
What?
I have a built-in mother urge. I don't know why they named me Albert. I should have had a female name.
Oh, but you shouldn't be able to make robots.
Look, boss, you worry a lot. You want robots, don't you?
Well, yeah, I guess everybody could use a robot.
I make robots. I'm making all you need.
Albert, put down that head and listen to me. I want to have a serious talk.
Sure, boss. What's on your mind?
Now, Albert, I just looked through your packing case and I found this tag. Look, it says X-190. X, Albert. Don't you understand? That means you're an experimental model.
That's correct.
You were never meant to be sold.
That is also correct.
I know. Don't you see? That means trouble. I can't keep you.
I've already taken care of that.
How do you mean?
I filed off my serial number and replated the surface.
Why did you do that?
So that they can't come around and take me back. They made me, and then they got scared and shut me off. But you're not afraid of me.
I'm not.
You assembled me and let me go to work.
Yep.
I'm sticking with you, boss.
But wait a minute. This could mean a lot of trouble for me, Albert.
No trouble. They can't prove a thing. I'll swear that you made me. I'll not let them take me back. They will take no chances next time. They'll break me up for scrap.
Oh, but look, if you make too many robots...
Robots are useful. You need a lot of them in this place. Now, don't worry, boss. Everything will work out.
Well...
I'll take good care of you.
Yeah.
Now, I must go back to work. Adelbert is nearly finished.
Mr. Knight, I'm from the county tax office. Tax assessor.
Oh, I didn't know you fellas came around more than once a year.
Ordinarily, we don't. This is a special case.
Oh?
Made a lot of improvements in the place the past few days.
Oh.
Landscaping, painting, yeah. Building.
Well.
Afraid I'll have to boost your assessment some.
I see.
Heard about those robots of yours, too.
Robots?
Personal property, you know. Have to pay a tax on them. Just how many have you got?
Oh, one or two.
I've been counting. They move around so fast I can't be sure, but I estimate the number at 38. That right?
If you say so.
38 it is, then. They cost $10,000 apiece. I'll assess them at five. That's $190,000.
Oh, no. Hey, that's pretty steep.
But I'm going easy on you. By rights, I should only allow you a third for depreciation. Well, that's it, Mr. Knight. $190,000.
Wait.
We'll send you the bill with your quarterly statement.
But...
Good day.
Good day. Look, Albert, look, I've been holding off until we got the new landscaping job under control, but I can't hold off any longer. I mean, we got to start selling some of the robots.
Selling?
Yeah, 20 of them. That should do for a start. tax assessor was here. I need the cash.
You can't sell the robots, boss.
Why can't I?
Because they're my family, my boys. Named after me, all of them.
Albert, I'm sorry, but that's ridiculous.
They're all I've got, boss. You wouldn't sell your own children, would you?
Well...
All their names start with A, just like mine. Abe, Adelbert, Alfred, Adam, Aaron, Anton, Axel...
All right. Don't go through the whole roll call. I mean, the point is I need the money.
Don't you worry, boss. I'll fix everything. You have nothing to worry about.
The point is, Mr. Knight, the Internal Revenue Department is always interested when a citizen shows a substantial capital gain during the year.
Capital gain? I haven't made any capital gain.
Oh, come, sir. I'm talking about the matter of some 52 robots. Well, as I understand it, their retail value is $10,000 each.
So they say.
52 times 10,000 is $520,000. On capital gains, you pay 50% or $260,000.
$200,000.
A tax roughly of $130,000.
Well, what do I do?
By the 15th of next month, you must file a declaration of estimated income. You pay half of the due tax at that time and the balance in monthly installments.
Monthly installments.
And there's one other matter.
One other matter?
We investigated. We found you make $10,000 a year.
Huh?
Would you tell me, out of personal curiosity, you understand?
I understand.
Just how a man of your particular means could show a capital gain of $500,000 in so short a time?
I'm beginning to wonder myself.
Well, our only concern is you pay your tax.
Yeah.
However, some other branch of the federal government might very well want to ask some questions sometime.
Oh?
If I were you, Mr. Knight, I would be ready with some answers.
Yeah.
Good day.
Good day. Albert, now look, I tell you, this is a crisis. Do you understand? Like it or not, I have got to sell some of your boys, a whole bunch of them.
Boss, I told you not to worry.
Not to worry. Listen, I just came from the income tax people. I owe the government a cool 130 grand and... Those boys don't fool around. I'm desperate.
Money is no trouble, boss. Come here.
Come where?
Over here. Look at this.
What's this? What, those bales? What have they got? Don't tell me.
Full of money, boss. Help yourself.
You mean the actual real money in those bales? Not stage money now.
Real money, boss. No ones, of course, but... lots of tens and twenties.
Yeah.
That bale over there is full of fifties.
Full of fifties.
No, we didn't fool around with the ones.
Albert, look me in the eye. Did you make that money?
You said you needed it. We took some bills and analyzed the ink. I found out how to weave the paper and made plates. I hate to sound immodest, boss, but they're beautiful.
Oh, my gosh, I'm a counterfeiter, too.
We just ran off as much as we thought you'd need.
Yeah.
If it's not enough, we'll... make some more.
It's enough. Not another dollar.
Well, you're the boss.
Albert, listen to me. There are laws in this country. I mean, you just can't go out and print money. That's a crime, don't you understand? Now, look, you take it all outside and burn it right up. You understand? And don't print any more. That is an order.
Gordon, are you down here?
I'm busy.
I hate to disturb you, dear, but I thought you ought to know about the sheriff.
I don't want to know the sheriff.
He was here with a subpoena or whatever you call them.
That's what you call them.
Seems the how-to company's going to sue us.
Oh, no. Oh, no, all right, that does it,
Gordon, where are you going?
To see my lawyer.
Offhand, old man, I'd say you were in quite a jam.
I didn't have to walk all the way over here to find that out. The point is, Lee, what in the name of heaven can I do?
Well, first, you'll have to file a declaration of estimated income.
Even if I can't pay?
Well, especially if you can't pay.
Oh?
Technically, then, you haven't violated the law, and all they can do is to try to collect what you owe.
Yeah.
They'll probably slap an attachment on your bank account.
What bank account? I'm broke.
Oh. Well, then, I'd say your major worry is the how-to company suit.
Yeah.
Now, if I were you, I'd settle it out of court.
Out of court?
Mm-hmm. They might call off the action if you returned all the robots.
Albert says he'll testify that I made him.
Well, Albert can't testify. As a robot, he has no standing in court.
Hmm?
No, you better give them back and get what terms you can.
No. I won't do it.
Huh?
I won't. Don't you see? They don't want Albert back because they can use him. They want to break him up to maintain their robot prices. Don't you see? It might be 1,000 years before his principle is rediscovered, if it ever is.
Would that be bad?
I don't know. Only time will tell that, but I mean, you could say the same thing about any great invention. Look, no, I will not let them destroy Albert.
Yes, I see your point, Knight. And I like it.
You like it?
I'll take the case. Now, of course, I ought to warn you, I'm not a very good lawyer.
I know.
I don't work hard enough at it.
But I do have a chance, huh?
In all my practice at law, Knight, I never saw a man who'd gotten himself as fouled up as this.
No.
I'd say your chances are nil.
Yeah. Boss? Uh-huh. It's Albert.
Boss, I heard about the suit.
Yeah, it's all right, Albert. Mr. Lee here is going to handle our case.
We robots want to help.
I'm afraid there's not much you can do.
Oh, yes, there is. I'm building a lawyer robot.
He's building a lawyer robot?
With far greater memory capacity than any human. And with brain computers that operate on logic. That's what law is based on, isn't it? Logic?
Well, so I've heard. But it won't work, Albert. To practice law, you must be admitted to the bar. To be admitted to the bar, you must have a degree in law and pass an examination. And although there's never been an occasion to establish a precedent, I suspect the applicant must be human.
Lee, wait a minute. What about law clerks? I mean, they don't have to be human.
Well, I'd say that was completely true.
Yeah, then Albert's robots can be clerks.
Mm-hmm. Well, could be.
See what I mean?
Yes. It's never been done, but there's nothing in the law that says it can't be done.
Then it's settled. I'll make a dozen to start. Each one will be an expert in one phase of the law. Boss, you're going to have the most powerful battery of legal talent ever assembled under one roof.
Quiet in the court. Mr. Lee, what is the meaning of this outrage?
What outrage, Your Honor?
Those robots sitting at the defense table.
Oh, these, Your Honor, are my valued assistants.
Robots?
Yes, Your Honor.
Take them away. They have no standing in this court.
If Your Honor will excuse me, they need no standing. I am the sole representative of the defendants. My client is a poor man, and he is opposed by the most formidable array of legal talent money can buy. Now, surely the court will not deny him whatever assistance he's been able to muster.
This, sir, is highly irregular.
If it please Your Honor, I should like to point out that we live in a mechanized age. The court clerk uses a machine to take down the transcript of these very proceedings. To my certain knowledge, no court has ever challenged the presence of such a device as an aid to the furtherance of justice. Now, if Your Honor can point out anything in the law specifically barring these robots from the court...
That's ridiculous, sir. Of course there is no such provision. At no time anywhere did anyone dream such a contingency would arise.
In that case, sir, I ask the court for a favorable ruling.
Mr. Lee, as you point out, there is no precedent for my ruling in any way but in your favor. Therefore, sir, with reluctance, I do so at this time.
And what kind of a day has it been? It's a day in which a new kind of trial has suddenly captured the imagination of the public. A trial in which a man accused of misappropriating a robot has brought into court a whole battery of robots to aid in his defense.
To give validity to their argument, Your Honor, it must first be proved that these robots are, in fact, the property of the plaintiff. That is the issue at trial in this case.
So, in the now famous robot case, the issue has come down to this. Was the robot stolen or was he liberated? It is a far-reaching question indeed.
Your Honor, I have already established that robots are possessed of free will, that they have the power of reasoning, and that they can most certainly reproduce. As to my worthy opponent's fourth contention, that they have no spiritual sense, I contend that this is irrelevant. There are agnostics and atheists in the human race,
and in general, no one has denied them their full rights on this count.
And so the trial has at last come to its end. The whole nation, indeed the whole world, awaits the momentous decision which must be handed down. In Washington, D.C., Treasury officials have been meeting steadily for a week to find some way to avoid the loss of the enormous taxes on robots in the event the decision rendered is in favor of the defense. One high government official has said that if robots are declared free and equal, it means they must be given full citizen rights under the Constitution. Already, the chairman of both major political parties are mapping campaigns to corner the robot vote.
Welcome home, darling.
Yeah, thank you. But what's going on here, Grace? I have more trouble getting into my own home than into the Pentagon.
Oh, you mean the robots? They've set up a defense perimeter.
A defense...
Albert.
Hello, boss. Welcome home.
Albert, what is the meaning of all the barbed wire and the rocket launchers?
Just precautions, boss. We're ready for any situation.
Such as?
Oh, like a mob deciding to take justice into its own hands, for instance.
Or if the decision goes against us?
That too, boss.
Dear, you two go on and talk. I've really got to get back to my painting. I have a beautiful still life that I simply got to finish.
Yeah, I finished. Albert, listen. You can't fight the whole world.
We won't go back. How Two Kits Incorporated will never lay a hand on me or any of my children.
Albert, this is madness, don't you understand? They'd get you with one bomb.
And me, too.
Better to die fighting, boss, than to live in chains.
I don't know.
That's our motto. No matter what happens, we're ready for the decision.
Is ready to render its decision. It is the most difficult decision I have ever made, for in following the letter of the law, I fear I may be subverting its spirit. After long days of earnest consideration of both the law and the evidence as presented in this court, I find for the defendant, Gordon Knight. I cannot rule otherwise. May I ask that this ruling, in spite of the fact that I myself made it, outrages my social conscience.
You did it, boss. You did it. We're free.
Yes, Albert. We sure did it. Where's my wife?
In the studio, painting.
Not another landscape.
Her fifth this week. She's doing very well.
Yes, isn't she?
And I am working on a new robot for her. A painter. Soon she won't have to bother doing it herself.
That's nice.
And you won't have to do anything anymore either, boss.
Oh?
Not a thing.
Oh?
We're going to take care of you from here on out.
Thanks.
Did I tell you about my new children yet?
No, I don't think so.
Alice, Angeline, Agnes, Agatha, Alberta, and Abigail.
Daughters?
Six of them, boss. And all with a built-in reproducing instinct just like mine.
Oh, no.
They're down in the basement now, turning out robots.
Great.
We've got everything worked out for you, boss. You won't have to worry about a thing for the rest of your life.
No, Albert. Not a thing.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Name Your Symptom by Jim Harmon. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
X-1 on Tuned to Yesterday, a broadcast from NBC, heard on April 3rd, 1956. It's an hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, exploring tomorrow with Gordon R. Dixon's story, Nago, or Desert Object. From Christmas Day, 1957, heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System, sci-fi editor John Campbell, Jr. is the host.
Major trouble in dealing with an alien.
is that we're accustomed to certain little signs, symbols, facial expressions, tones of voice that have meaning when a human being is communicating with a human being. But we have no system of signs and no code of communication with the alien. How could we tell what the alien was thinking? You've heard a lot about the subliminal advertising recently. There's been quite a bit of discussion about subliminal messages. You know, we use subliminal messages all the time, but we don't quite recognize them. How do you know when someone's angry? You look at him. How do you know when someone's hurt? He doesn't say so, but there's some clue you get. Suppose you were trying to communicate with someone who couldn't speak, but did all their communicating by the subliminal signs. You'd never be able to say just how you knew what the feeling was.
Andy, what? Here he comes, a little bit out of the icebox. We'll bring him out for me and Rob, will you?
Dish has got to be washed, Dad.
You've got nobody in there. There's nobody coming. Get yourself a root beer and come out and join us. Starting to cool off out here now. You'd think a girl would like to come and sit with a good-looking fellow like Rob here.
Oh, come on out, Kathy. It's a real bright night outside here. You ought to see it.
When isn't it on the desert?
What, Kathy?
I'm coming. I'm through now. Here, you'll have to open it yourself.
Got my opener right here in my watch chain. Give him here. You got one for yourself, Kathy?
Didn't want one. Move over.
Lots of shooting stars out tonight. And here we sit, looking at them. I tell you, when I was your age, Rob, and if I'd have seen myself as I am now, sitting on the front steps of a little cafe and gas pump, 10 miles from nothing but a wide spot in the road, middle of the desert.
Oh, Tooth Springs, not just a wide spot, 1,500-something people.
That's counting all the ranches 40 miles in every direction. And one town clock and one town constable.
Two, Jimmy Herbert and me. And it's Marshall, not constable.
You aren't but half a constable, Rob. A part-time traffic cop nights. And why aren't you back guarding the town if it's so valuable? Instead of sitting here with me.
That's all right. I gotta head back in a bit and check in at 11.
Look, there's a bright one.
What? Bright what?
That shooting star over there. See it? You'd think they was wonders of nature never seen before. Regular 4th of July light-up. I'd rather look at that many silver dollars any day. And if I'd had a decent break, I'd be looking at them, too. You kids get your wishes in before it fell? What'd you wish for, Rob? Don't need to ask what Kathy wished for. Kathy?
No, Dad.
Well, I didn't say nothing bad. Don't every woman wish for good looks?
Dad.
Now, you knew I was kidding you. I wouldn't.
Look. Look at that one. It's coming right at us.
Where?
What?
Hey, look out.
It went just over there.
Get that car of yours. Plane, nothing. Them meteors are worth money.
Wait for me.
Somebody's got to mind the gas pumps. You stay put.
What was it?
Let me. I'll carry it here. Into the house. In back.
Hey, it's one of those big rubber beach balls.
I'll put it on the sofa here. Good thing nobody's stopping for gas or a sandwich right now.
Easy.
Beach ball, did you say, girl? Look again.
That hole there. Like a mouth. It looks like it's breathing.
You're darn right it's breathing. We found it at the bottom of a little drop on the wash, out there by a water boiler sort of thing.
Acts like it's knocked out.
It's moving.
Grab it. Don't let it run away.
Now go.
It talked. It said something.
I knew it. I really got something. Something at last.
I gotta get back to town and report this.
Hold it.
You crazy boy.
You out of your head? Can't you see what I got here? We can get rich off this. If we don't throw it away like dumb fools.
Let me go, Harp. I got to report. This is my duty.
Why? Who else you think knows about it? There were lots of stars shooting around tonight, weren't there? Who was around but us to see it land? That noise it made coming down wasn't much, just a bump. Nobody would know. No one else could. This is ours.
I'm just bound to find out sooner or later it came down, and if I didn't report
it... How'd they know you heard it or saw it? I tell you, it didn't make much noise. Who's to guess? So you didn't find out about it for a couple of days, don't you see, boy? That gives us time to figure out what to do, how to make the best of it.
But I...
You listen to me. This could be the best thing that happened to us. Now you get back to town. Go on, kid. But don't say a word. I'll keep it here. Come back tomorrow. Not early, but about the time of afternoon you always drop in.
What do you do with it?
Just keep it safe. Just keep it safe. Now get going.
Well, all right.
Dad?
We're going to be rich, girl. We're going to be rich.
Nago doesn't seem to be very communicative. But maybe there's more communication there than appears. An alien. How alien? How dangerous? How helpful? What sort of reaction? This strange beach ball thing.
Dad, where'd you get that suit? What have you been up to all day?
Sit down, Kathy.
What do you mean, sit down? Somebody's got to watch the cash register all day. First you stay up all night with that whatever it is, and then you...
I've been at the bank.
The bank?
That's right. I've been talking to Jim Goshen. I made a business loan. We're going to make some changes and improvements in the place here.
Oh, now, Dad, you know Jim wouldn't loan the bank's money to us.
We've got a good spot here. It's a natural for people to stop at after that long haul over the desert, particularly at night. And the line of motels is a good idea, too. Besides, it'd be a boost for the town. People who stop here will go on to buy things in Two Springs.
Well, what made him see that all of a sudden?
I did, girl. I should have gone in and laid things on the line to him a long time ago. I don't know why. Before, things never seemed to go right, but now...
I don't see why now should be any different.
It was finding that thing in the back bedroom there that did it. It was like a sign. I felt like a new man this morning. When I walked in on Jim Goshen, I was that sure. I was that sure he didn't have a chance. Shook me by the hand when we were all done and said, Harvey, I believe in you. Yes, he did. That's just what he did.
Dad.
What? What's the matter with you now?
Dad, I don't like it.
Don't like it? For the first time since you were born, since your mother died, we look like we've got a chance in the world, and you say you don't like it.
It's so sudden. Last night... And now this.
This is what I was born to be, born to do. I was always meant to make money, only I could never get started. Now I know how to go about it. Now, that's all there is to it. How's the thing? You look in on it?
No, I've been so busy out front.
Let's see, then. Close the door. We don't want it rolling out of here. It wants to get away, back to the thing it came in.
Now go...
What? Feed it? Why feed it?
Well, if you aren't going to let it go...
Let go.
Feed it? Let it go? You sound like that Rob. Oh, no. I told him to stay away from here. Sit tight. Hang on to it. It'll make our fortune yet.
Let go. Let go.
Who's there?
Kathy?
Rob? Rob? What in the world? Just a minute. I've got to put on a robe. Rob, what are you doing rapping at my window in the middle of the night?
Kathy, I've got to come in.
In here?
I've got to get to see it, Kathy. Just see it for a minute or two. I'm coming in.
Rob!
Kathy, take me to it. It wants to see me. I can feel it.
Rob, are you drunk?
You don't understand, Kathy. It can do something for me. I know it can. Kathy, listen. Listen, you like me, don't you? Won't you do that for me? Just take me to it. I bet I know where it is. It's in that extra back bedroom you and your dad use as a storeroom, isn't it?
Rob, come back here. Do you want to wake up, Dad?
Show me.
All right, but for heaven's sake, be quiet. This way. Give me your hand.
Oh, Kathy.
Stand still. I'll get the lights. Now, look out. It's right under your feet.
Nago.
There it is. Yes. Yes.
Well, don't look like that.
Nago.
Kathy, listen. Did you ever want to get away? To get out into the world and do things, big things, to be famous, really famous?
Oh, Rob, you come out of here.
No, wait. Kathy, I mean it. I can do it. We can do it. All we have to do is take this thing with us. When I've got it around, I feel I know how to do it. It doesn't take much money or brains. It's just being sure. And with it, I'm sure.
Kathy, what's all that noise?
Listen to me, Kathy.
Kathy, what's going on out there? What are you doing?
Nothing, Dad. Go back to sleep.
Kathy.
No, go.
What would you do with this?
I'd keep it with us. What else? Long as it'll last.
I'm trying to find out what's going on there.
Here comes Dad. You better go talk to him, Rob.
Yeah, I'll handle him. You wait here. Keep an eye on it.
I'll keep an eye on it, all right.
Now listen to me. You listen to me. No.
And now for you.
Now go.
Oh, now you'll try it on me, will you? Oh, yes, you know what I want. Of course you would. I can feel you making me feel the way a beautiful woman feels. But I'm not fooled like they were, those men. I know I'm plain. You hear me? I know it. You think I could live with myself all these 19 years and let you fool me in a minute? But go ahead. You can make me feel it, but you can't make me believe it. Never. Never.
See,
I won. All right, now, you aren't going to drive Dad or Rob crazy anymore. I'm going to take you out in the desert and lose you where they'll never find you. You come. Good thing you aren't too heavy. I know a fine hole in the side of a wash you'll never get out of.
Nago
me.
Nago's specialty seems to be what you might call a promissory note. She was promising things, apparently, but, a woman is peculiar in one respect. She's remarkably practical, as well as being idealistic. And the practical pragmatism doesn't yield too well to promissory notes.
Oh, here's a place that'll hold you. I'll just put you down here, open the hole a bit, lock you down with a stone. Well, aren't you going to try once more? Oh, come now. Aren't you going to try once more to make me feel lovely and wanted and pretty?
Nago.
What was it you wanted from them anyway? From Rob and my dad? What were you after anyway? You ought to be able to make some kind of an answer. Go ahead, you can't fool me anyway. I'm onto your trick of finding out what people want and making them feel they can have it. And maybe they could have. It seemed to work for Dad. But even if your making me feel attractive would make other people think so too, I still wouldn't buy a pig in a poke. You hear that?
No.
All right, I don't want to hurt you. Tell me what you were after and I'll leave you here to save yourself or not. I don't care. What did you want from us? What?
Nago.
I think I can hear you. Hello? What? Oh, I didn't know. No, I'll get you to it. I'll get you to it in time. This way. Oh, I'll hurry.
Abby!
She won't find us. He won't get you up in time. Oh, please hold on. Just a little longer.
Charlie! Charlie, I'm coming! I'm following your tracks! You all right? Can you hear me, Charlie?
Oh, I can see you now. Just a little farther.
Charlie!
Oh, here. In with you, quick. There! I'll leave him now. I'll keep him back. Here I am, Rob!
Charlie! Oh, Kathy, I thought something happened. I was crazy back there. I don't know what got into me. Kathy, I don't want what I said. All I want... Oh, you had me so scared when I found you gone.
Me? You were worried about me? Oh, Rob.
But, Kathy, that thing... I gotta find it, Kathy. Maybe it's dangerous. You don't know.
Shh, it's all right. You don't have to worry anymore. She's going home.
Kathy, you let it go? But you don't know what it tried. How could you trust it to go free? You don't understand.
There she goes. Wave to her, Rob. Wave to her with me. Of course I know. We were the ones who didn't understand. We forgot anyone could think of anybody but themselves. She's a mother, Rob. And of course she'd do anything, promise anything, to get back home to her child.
Start with a preconception. But how can you tell when you don't know the meaning of the clues? Is it a warrior? A scout seeking to bring in an invading crew? A scientist? Or perhaps a lost child? Or a mother who's missed a turn and trying to get home to baby? We start with a preconception, but preconceptions aren't always right. This time they weren't.
Exploring Tomorrow on Tuned to Yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System release from Christmas Day 1957. Now moving ahead in time to 1976, where the Ballantine Science Fiction Hour recorded a conversation between authors Lester Del Rey, Frederick Pohl, Isaac Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke, and the author of the story on Exploring Tomorrow, Gordon R. Dixon.
Gordon Dixon is most famous for his thematic science fiction novels, of which the Dorside Trilogy is the best known. Mr. Dixon has won science fiction's two highest awards, the Hugo in 1965 for his short story, Soldier Ask Not, and the Nebula in 1966 for his novelette, Call Him Lord.
And from that conversation, here's his answer to the question, what book would you most like to be remembered for?
This is a hard thing for me to answer, not because I have any doubt about the answer, but it's fitting the category. See, I have absolutely no doubt about what I want to be remembered for. It's the child cycle. But I'm going to have to do the whole blinking thing to do it, because only if I do it right will it turn out to be a structured piece of fiction in 12 parts, running through the historical framework, the contemporary framework, and into the future fiction framework. And also of a type that I firmly believe and hope has not been done before, that I've labeled the conscious thematic novel. So it'll take me 15 more years to do it, and at the end of that time, if I've done it right, it'll come out that way, and I want to be remembered for it. I've got a different type of problem in choosing a book that I wish I had written, because I have to sort of grab at random between about a dozen books. Now, I've already mentioned Arthur's Childhood's End. I can pick Paul's Brainwave, and I pulled one of my famous blank outs, Jaunting.
Alfie Bester.
Alfie's, what's the title?
Tiger, or Stars My Destination.
Stars My Destination is what I'm thinking of. But I could go on and name, as I say, 8 to 10 more. And what I want from each one of them is one particular thing. See, I'd like to take the ring out of the idol's eye, or nose here, and, you know, steal the jewel from it's gone someplace else, this type of thing.
It's difficult, really, for anybody, for me at least, and I think for most writers, to say what story of someone else's he wishes he had written. There are a lot of stories which are inordinately successful, and I wish I had had stories that successful, which have been won awards that I haven't won, and so on. But the only thing any writer has to sell is his own individual, personal point of view. And there would be no way for me to have written Nightfall, or the Foundation series, or Helen Alloy, or any of the great stories that I've admired so much, because they weren't my stories. The only stories I know how to write are mine.
No, no, you settle for that, Fred. They're pretty good.
I think that is generally true. I think that when we say, I wish I had written that, we do always see one thing in it that's near and dear to our heart, and we wish we'd had the chance to write the story about that.
Can I end by telling you a little anecdote?
Can we stop you?
No, you can't. Fred Pohl and I, Isaac Asimov, and Ben Bova, and Gordy Dixon, with a few attached ladies, were sitting around a single table in Toronto at the World Science Fiction Convention there a couple of years, 73.
And agonizing meal, I remember it well.
Yes, and I won the Hugo for the novel, and Fred won it for the short story, and Ben won it for editorship, and there they were, a series of Hugos at the table, and we all turned, well, at least I turned to Gordy Dixon. I said, Gordy, you're disgracing us.
And I hung my head.
Yes, you did.
From 1976 on the Ballantine Science Fiction Hour and preserved by the Science Fiction Oral History Association. That was a conversation with heralded sci-fi authors, including Gordon R. Dixon, whose story we just heard on Exploring Tomorrow. And that wraps this hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.